The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But next, leadless pacemakers, LEAD as in leadless, as in wire really, leadless pacemakers are a significant development in cardiac care. Unlike traditional pacemakers, leadless pacemakers are implanted directly into the heart, and we'll talk about how it's done. But to tell us more about this and other cardiac technology that's available now is Dr. Jim O'Brien, consultant cardiologist at the Mater Private Network. Jim, good morning and welcome.
Morning, Pat.
Now, what's the current pacemaker? Before we talk about the leadless one, how is that normally installed?
Well, pacemakers generally treat low heartbeats or bradycardias, they're also called. And traditionally, a pacemaker will fit just underneath your left collarbone with a small battery. It's about the size of a matchbox or maybe one of those scented soaps that you might get in a
hotel.
Okay, and
would you see it? If someone took off their shirt, would you see the battery under
the skin? There would be a surface wound usually visible, yeah. It's quite small. It's only about 2 or 3 centimetres long, and there might be a very slightly palpable bump under the skin where the battery resides. And that threads a couple of wires coming off it down through the heart, through the blood vessels, the major blood vessels, the endovasculature, down into the inside of the
heart.
And
how is that inserted?
You actually have to plumb the vein, basically. You have to stick a needle into it and hope that you don't hit some of the surrounding tissues like the lung that can potentially unfortunately cause pneumothoraces, etc.
Okay, so you have to be very careful.
You do. You have to be quite careful.
Now, the leadless one, how does that work?
So leadless is a pretty new development. It's been rolled out in the last few years. It is guideline directed, but only for certain patient population groups. In patients that might have had a previous endocarditis or infection on an old pacemaker, or in patients that don't actually have any access points from their upper venous architecture, or in patients with ingrowing dwelling catheters like dialysis patients or cancer patients, what you might do is offer to put a leadless device the size of a flash drive just up from a large vein in the top of the leg where the entire device is all one little
unit.
Okay,
battery, pacemaker itself, all self-contained.
The whole shooting match.
Now, it's been described to me as something about maybe the size of an AAA battery.
Right.
Cylindrical.
Right, yeah.
Is that about the size?
That's about accurate, yeah. It wouldn't be a whole lot different from the size of a typical Bic Biro pentop.
But rather, but shorter than a Bic.
A little shorter, absolutely, yeah. And, you know, it's like I said, they're not really rolled out. They're guideline directed only for certain patient population groups, but can be very, very beneficial in those groups where, you know, they've had trouble before.
Okay, how do you insert this one?
So what you do is you have to put quite a large catheter, a very large sheath, in through the top of your femoral vein, which is the one just down at the top of the hip there. That goes all the way up, bends over like a swan's neck, and literally drops the new pacemaker into the important part of the endocardium where it resides from then on.
How long does it last?
Well, that depends a little bit on the type of pacemaker you use. There's a few industries that make them. They can last anywhere from about 10 to the newer technologies, which can last all the way up to about 25 years.
So the battery lasts that long? Because you're not replacing the battery at all. The device is self-contained, and when it's bunched, you have to replace it.
You do have to replace it. Now, the great thing about leadless pacemakers, again, it may be distinctive from the other pacemakers that people traditionally used, is that they can actually be retrieved. There's a little docking button at the back where small wires can be used, almost like a fishing net.
You
grab the back of it, yeah, fish out the old one and deliver a new one in its place.
Okay, if you can't get it out, can you go a second time with another one?
You can. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, there's usually enough room along the septum of the right ventricle there that can harbour up to 2 or 3 devices. So patients can have a heart that looks like a bag of ball bearings at the end of it. But there is enough room usually to fit quite a few of them beside each other without too much risk of interference.
Now, it all sounds very dramatic, but how long does the procedure take?
These days, it's becoming more streamlined. I've done a few in the recent past. Even with a general anaesthetic that some patients choose to do because for reasons of comfort down around the leg, it can last no more than about half an hour, 45 minutes, sometimes up to an hour if there's any trickery met along the way.
Any trickery? What sort of trickery might you meet?
Well, sometimes the vein isn't terribly easy to plumb. You have a very, very large sheath, a big Wavin pipe that you have to put through the vein. So you need to serially dilate the vein to basically accommodate for the large sheath. That can take a little bit of time. And then sometimes along the way, you can have some stenoses or narrowings of your inferior vena cava, the main vein that comes all the way back up to the heart, that might need some navigation with extra wiring, etc.
Now, what do you use to watch all of this process happening? I mean, are you watching it on some sort of scan in real time as you do it?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways that you're watching how the efficiencies of procedures are going. Number one, fluoroscopy, essentially a live X-ray, is watching the sheath and the pacemaker being threaded up through the veins and delivered into the heart. Another thing then is that one of the device programmers, the thing that programs basically the low setting rates that you want, the lowest heart rate that patients are allowed to have from then on, is being being programmed actively as the device is being put in as well from outside the body with a little magic wand that communicates through almost like Bluetooth.
My goodness, that's extraordinary. So the people who then have this pacemaker, there are different settings. You said that like you might be allowed the lowest heart rate of what, 40 or something, and then it kicks in?
It depends from patient to patient, but the normal human heart rate in the general population is between about 60 and 100. Now, about 2% of the population might have a slightly slower rate, but anybody down into the 20s or 30s might be well advised to have a pacemaker. And you can basically ascertain what the patient's needs are. If they're used to having a heart rate down in the 40s to begin with, you could probably set a lower limit of about 40, but mostly 60.
Super fit people generally have a lower resting heart rate. I mean, and sometimes it's difficult for them to get the heart rate up to get the benefits of a higher heart.
You have it exactly. Yeah, I was talking to two very nice athletes in just the waiting area who were talking a bit about heart rate variability and resting heart rate. Athletes and high performance athletes can often go all the way down into the 30s or 40s with impunity. So if a pacemaker is still demanded at any stage after that, you might just set the lower limit to kind of a rate that's more befitting their needs long term.
Now, you know, when there are people doing triathlons and other extreme events, and their heart then is required to do a hell of a lot of work. What happens to the heart? Is that good for the heart to be stretching it in these ways, or are you better off just trolling through life, taking a brisk walk every day?
Well, you should never underestimate the human capacity for obsessiveness. And I think we can become addicted to exercise almost the same way as, you know, illegal substances back in the day. And sometimes your heart actually can give out to you as a consequence. You over-exercise a heart muscle and it starts to tire over time. Sometimes that can manifest in the conduction system as a slow heartbeat. But generally speaking, good aerobic capacity remains recommendable. So my recommendation is usually the number 220 minus your age, 80% of that number for 20 to 30 minutes, two or three times a week.
220 minus your age and 80% of that.
80% of that, exactly. Multiplied by 8 over 10. That's what your target heart rate generally is if you do a regular aerobic exercise.
So that's when you're exercising, obviously.
Correct, yeah. And that usually translates to a lower resting heart rate when you're not exercising, which tends to be advantageous for people long term.
Mm. Okay, so the pacemaker, what cohort of the population, what percentage would get a pacemaker every year? I mean, is it a huge number?
Not huge, but it's certainly not small. Like the population, as we're all aware, is getting a little older with the passage of time. I think the 2022 census gave about a 10% incidence of people over the age of 75. And there's about a 1 to 2% chance of a greater than 75-year-old patient requiring a pacemaker long term. So as you can see, a little over 500,000 in this country, 2% of whom might need a pacemaker is not an inconsiderable
number. Not an inconsiderable number. And mind you, if you get one at 75 and it's going to last 25 years, if you get one of these leadless ones, it's going to see you out. It'll last longer than you will. Now, other technologies, a cardiac event recorder, what's that?
An event recorder, well, it depends. That's a little bit different. There's a lot of different ways that can be the case. So there is self-checks and wearables. I think I might have even seen your own watch historically. It might have opportunities for ECG capabilities that way. So these are the Apple Watch, the Fitbit Sense, the Cardia, the Samsung technology, the Huawei. And then there are event monitors that can be given by your primary healthcare provider or emergency departments as well. So that might be just a single 10-second ECG, a 24-hour to 48-hour tape of your heart rhythm. That's called a Holter monitor, a protracted thing called an event monitor for 48 hours, long-term telemetry if you're an inpatient, or sometimes a small microchip-sized thing, again, under your left collarbone that watches your heart for 2 or 3 years called a loop
report. So much technology coming along. Some of the questions coming in. Would this be suitable for an 88-year-old man with lower kidney function? What are the limitations to qualify for this leadless pacemaker?
Excellent question. Absolutely. And I hope I answered this efficiently enough. Usually the patient groups that qualify for leadless pacemakers might be indeed older patients because an anatomical confrontation is often encountered when you're trying to get through old veins that have gotten a bit tortuous with the passage of time from the upper approach. anybody that might have cognitive decline or dementia might not be able to look after a pocket just while it's healing up in the usual shoulder area. Dialysis patients with long-term indwelling catheters have about a 10% need of a pacemaker and about a 20% chance of infection, so they might benefit. Mm. And cancer patients receiving chemotherapy, immunosuppressive therapy or radiotherapy.
I'm 71, advised to have a pacemaker soon, but they say I'll never be able to play golf again. Is that true?
That, generally speaking, is not necessarily true. Usually you have to stitch a traditional pacemaker down to the pectoralis muscle just in your upper chest.
And your swing.
And your 9-iron might suffer for a couple of weeks. But generally speaking, the pacemaker gets comfortable in its new home within about 2 to 4 weeks, and it's usually okay to go back to an 18 holes then.
My daughter has one of these leadless pacemakers. She's only 30, so having a pacemaker fitted was a huge issue for her, given it would be on view on her chest. But this leadless one has been amazing and works perfectly for her as she's so young.
I'm really delighted to hear it. Actually, that's another very important point. The one group that I didn't mention that might benefit from leadless pacemakers most are the young patients, because you might be envisaging otherwise 6 or 7 battery changes in a traditional device and the risk for endocarditis over time and the risk for venous thrombosis that goes with that. So I'm delighted she's doing well.
Can you ask your guest about the damage that cocaine does to the heart? We were warned again of the rise this week, especially with young women.
Yeah, cocaine is not to be trifled with, absolutely. It can cause tachyarrhythmias, so fast heartbeats, but actually can cause a lot of coronary epicardial, coronary spasm culminating in heart attacks in young people as well if taken to abusive levels. And obviously, if you have a heart attack, you can end up with conduction system pacing disease, which might need a pacemaker.
Last question. I was reading about a new leadless pacemaker that's the size of a grain of rice.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
On the way?
These sound very, 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 very exciting indeed. Yeah, and I think there's even talk of rechargeable batteries in some of these devices. Amazing the amount of microcircuitry they can get into tiny spaces, like the level of transistors. I've never seen them, never done them, but I wait with bated breath until they arrive.
Very good. The size of a grain of rice. Dr. Jim O'Brien, consultant cardiologist at Matter Private Network. Jim, thank you very much for joining us in studio today.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.